We're holding on Lamed Daled, Omud Beis by the Mishnah. Continuing on what the Kohen Gadol does on Yom Kippur morning. So far we said he did his first tvila of the day and his first two kiddush adayim raglayim, and he had done the avodah of the Tamid. There's actually different opinions later on in the Sefer. We're going to have a machlokas in the seventh parak of the Sefer around Afayin, whether at this point he also brought some of the Musafim, and in turn there's machlokas Rishonim who the halacha is like in that. So maybe during that first change of clothes, the big day Zahav, maybe he also did some of the Musafim, or maybe not, maybe he only did the Tamid and the other things related to it, like we said in the Mishnah, the Hatavas HaNeiros and the burning of the morning Ketores and so forth. So now we're up to the second one. Hebi'ul the Beis HaParva, the Mishnah says, they brought him to the Beis HaParva, which we've learned previously that the mikveh for him, for his remaining four tevilas, was on top of that, because we said, unlike the first tevilah, which could take place in the choil area, because Rashi had said, because not daraisa, although Mepharshim have a hard time with that, because all of them, we said the other day, we learned from Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai. So Tosfos rather explained, it's not a daraisa versus darabanan, it makes sense that the first one, before he's even become Kaddish by wearing the Bigda Kahuna, it makes more sense that that one should take place in the Chol area. Only after that, when he's already wearing the Bigda Kahuna for the day, does it make more sense that the rest of them, then we say the rest of them have to take place in the Kaddish area. The Pasuk actually says, so we learn from that all of them have to be in a Makam Kaddish in the Azara, with the exception of the first one. So they brought him to the Beis HaParva, or a Kodesh Hoy, so it was in the Kodesh area. And Persu Sodin Shal Bot Beina Levena Am, they spread out, they hung up a linen cloth between him and the people to make him a chitza, so he could tovel in privacy. And why linen, we're going to say in the Gemara, we said it already actually the other day. Kiddush Yodah V'Ragla V'Posha. Then he does Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim, and then he undresses. Rav Meir says the other way around, Posha Kiddush Yodah V'Ragla, he undresses and does Kiddush Adayim V'Raglayim. Now, the first Kiddush Adayim Raglayim, we discussed in the Gemara, this Machlokas, we said there are two ways to understand what Rav Meir versus the Chachamim are saying, why Rav Meir says he has to first take off the clothes and then Kiddush Adayim Raglayim, and the Chachamim say the other way around. We had Rav Papa saying that it comes from different ways of understanding the Pasuk, since the Pasuk says, Barochatz, in connection, that you should wash, in connection with both Ufoshat and Velovash, with both taking off the clothes and putting on the new clothes, then Rav Meir understands that there's a similarity between them in that just like the second kiddush he does, just like the second kiddush he does after he gets dressed in the new clothes. So the same way the other one takes place, the other one has to take place. So what it is in both cases he gets dressed and then does kiddush adayim raglayim. So the pshita also has to be first he gets undressed, then he does kiddush adayim raglayim. Where the Chachamim said that according to Rav Papa, that what it is that the just like the second one takes place when he's dressed, the first one also has to take place while he's still dressed. That was Rav Papa. Then we have Rav Papa's Talmidim who argued and brought a braisa to support themselves. That actually what it is Rav Meir says that the two Kiddush Adayim Raglayim have to do with the getting dressed. Therefore, they should both be as close as possible to him getting dressed, where the Chachamim take the view that one of them has to do with the getting undressed and the other one with the getting dressed, and therefore they can be before those respective things. Anyway, so whatever the case, he did that Kiddush Adayim Raglayim. We also mentioned the other day, by the way, Tosfos Yeshanim pointed out that if he's going to do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim in the Azara, obviously he can't be doing that undressed. It would mean, in other words, that he'd have to be covering himself with a towel or a blanket or something. Here we don't even need that because the Kiddush Adayim Raglayim over here, later on in the next perek, we're going to talk about one of the differences between Yom Kippur and the rest of the year is that the Kohen Gadol would use the Kitton Shel Zahav. He would use a golden jug to do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim. So fine, they would fill that up with water from the Kiyur. They could bring it to the Beis HaParva where he's toveling. And then that way he could do Kiddush Adayim Raglayim in private over there behind the screen. Again, even according to the mayor who says that he's undressed when he does the first one. Okay. Anyway, Yorad V'Tovel, he goes down and toivels. Olivan Istapov, he comes up and dries himself off. As we discussed the other day, the fact that he dries himself off is important because that way there's no chatzitza, the water or any dirt in the water is not a chatzitza between him and his clothes. And that way he's not enjoying the water on Yom Kippur, which after all, you're not allowed to bathe on Yom Kippur any longer than necessary. etc. Heviu lo bigdei lavan. They brought him the white clothes, the clothes that he's going to be wearing for most of the avodah of Yom Kippur. Lavash, he got dressed. The kiddush yad v'raglav, and again he does kiddush adayim v'raglayim. So far, we're up to 2 tevilas and 4 kiddushim. Now, so what the Mishnah digresses a second, not really digresses, but the Mishnah describes to us about these white clothes. What they are, we know. They're the 4 white clothes that the Kohen Gadol wears on Yom Kippur. According to some opinions, 3 out of the 4 of them are the same as what a Kohen Hedyot wears during the rest of the year. The Avnage is different. According to a different opinion, we learned about this previously, is all 4 of them are the same, because according to that opinion, the regular Kohenim wear linen, a linen Avnage throughout the year as well. But the difference is, the Mishnah is going to say, these clothes that he wore on Yom Kippur were a lot more expensive than usual. But Shachar, in the morning, meaning for the first time, he's going into the first series of times, he's going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Altogether, by the way, the Kohen Gadol goes a bunch of times into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. He goes in there one time to bring the Ketores. Then he goes in again to do the blood of the Par. Then again to do the blood of the Sawyer. Then later on in the afternoon, after he's done the various other avodas in the afternoon that we're going to describe later on in the Masechta, after that he goes in again and takes out the pan of coals and the spoon of Ketores that he left there earlier. For that, again, he wears Bigdei Lavan. We learned the other day that he has to, that the pasuk that describes that is out of order. And so there are 2 times during the day when he wears Bigdei Lavan. So in the morning, Hayalovish plusin shal shneim asa mana. In the morning, he would wear a plusin outfit that costs 12 mana. Plusin, Rashi explains, it means linen that comes from pilusin, which is, well, Rashi doesn't define where it is, but in other places, we find that pilusin is a translation of, is the Aramaic translation, the Aramaic name, for a certain part of Egypt. Hagoros Habach brings here that the Targum Yerushalmi translates when it says that the Jewish people lived the Eretz Ramses, in the land of Ramses in Goshen, it translates it Pilusa. So Pilusin then would be, in general, Egypt was always a major linen growing, major flax growing area. You have, for example, at the end of Makas Barad, where Moshe informs Paro that the flax was damaged by Makas Barad. So they had very high quality linen that came from this area of Ramses, from Pilusin. So in the morning, they would have the Kohen Gadol wear the Kohen Gadol's outfit, his Bigdei Lavan, would be made of linen that came from there. Different explanations. Some of the Mephoshim say is that Pilusin is actually comes from a word that means an outfit or a uniform, whatever it is, that was worth 12 mana. And to put that in perspective, we find in various places that 200 a mana is 100 zuz. So 12 mana is 1200 zuz. We find in various places that the expectation was that a poor person could live for a year on 200 zuz. Therefore, for example, if a person has 200 zuz, he's not allowed to take tzedakah. So that would mean, if you think of it, then in those terms, it means that these clothes that he wore in the morning were worth what a poor person could live on for 6 years. So that was in the morning. Ben Ha'abayim, in the afternoon, he would be wearing Hindavian Shal Shmona Meyas Zuz. In the afternoon, to go and take out the Kaf and Mafta, he would be wearing Hindavian, which is, Rashi says that Hindavi is the Aramaic translation of Kush. Now Kush can mean Ethiopia. There is also actually some of the Mephoshim say that Hindavian might be related to the word Hindu and therefore to India. I mean, Kush and India both do have some things in common, including that the people from both of those places are dark skinned. So they might have used the word Kush interchangeably for both of them. There was also geographically, they had a notion in those days that there's a land bridge connecting Ethiopia to India. There's not, but they thought there was. So it might be also that people use the word Kush interchangeably for both of those places. Whatever the case, so in the afternoon, he wore Bigdei Lavan that were made out of linen from Hindva, again from Ethiopia or from India, as the case may be, that was worth Shal Shmona Meyas Zuz, that was worth 800 Zuz. Now 800 Zuz is 8 mana. So Tosfos on the next Amud asks, why doesn't it say 8 mana? And it goes through a couple of possibilities and doesn't like them, and says that what it is maybe just the word Shmona Mana, it doesn't really flow well, like it would be almost like a tongue twister. On the other hand, though, the Gvura Sari is not really happy with that explanation at all. And he says rather that he talks about rather that the 800 zuz might have, Tosfos brings up a possibility and rejects it, that maybe the 800 zuz over here are a different kind of zuz. So he says that no, maybe what it was is I mean, there's also the question Tosfos asks that when it comes to the Chachamim in a minute in the Mishnah, we're going to have a total. Rav Meir doesn't give us a total. So he says that maybe the vote is that it's not meant to be totaled up, according to Rav Meir, because the 800 zuz over here, we are talking about a whole different kind of zuz, and therefore, and maybe a more expensive zuz, maybe whatever, and therefore it doesn't really flow together to call it Shmo, therefore it doesn't fit to call it Shmo Namana, and therefore he's not giving us a total. Anyway, Divrei Rav Meir, that's what Rav Meir says. The Chum say in the morning he wore an outfit worth 18 mana, so 1.5 times. They don't say where it was from necessarily, but that was worth 1.5 times as much as Rav Meir makes it, instead of 12, 18 mana. Or when Abayim shall shnei masa mana, in the afternoon he would wear an outfit worth 12 mana. Hakol shloshim mana, the total is 30 mana. The Gemara is going to ask why the Chachamim have to give it a total. We know that 18 plus 12 equals 30, so we'll see that in the Gemara. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Elu mishel tzibur, all of those amounts that we said for the clothes come from the tzibur. They come from the Machta Shakur collection that we learned about in Masechta Shkolim. The Imrotza lahosif, if the Kohen Gadol wants to add to that, Mosif Mishaloi, he can add more money on his own to buy more, even more expensive Bigdei Kohuna. Although, as the Gemara says, he has to give it over to the tzibur because he has to be wearing clothes that belong to the tzibur when he's doing the avodah. So the Gemara starts off. My parva. We said that this lishka where he toveled on top of was called Beis HaParva. What does the name parva mean? Amar Rabbi Yosef, parva amgusha. So Rabbi Yosef says parva was a magician. So Rashi says a magician named parva built it. In which case, I mean, you're not allowed to do magic al Torah, and also you're not allowed to have goyim participate in the building of the Beis Mikdash. So that leads the Meiri to say, okay, so it would mean that he was a Jew who was practicing magic, which was Asur. Later on, he did Shuvah, and then he built this chamber or gave them money towards building this chamber, so they named it after him. They wouldn't have allowed him to build it if he was a goy, and they wouldn't have named it after him if he was a Yid or Rasha, so it must be that he did Shuvah. The Tiferes Yisrael, on the other hand, wants to say not that he was really a magician, but rather, since we're saying the mikveh was on top of it, he built such an ingenious system of pipes inside the walls where you couldn't even tell where the water was coming from and where it's going, that people thought it was magic. But really, it was just very good. Really, it was just the Tiferes Yisrael learns he was a very good engineer. Tosfos brings from the Aruch a different explanation, that this parva was indeed a magician, like the Gemara is saying over here, and not necessarily a Jewish one, he might have been a Goyish one. He dug a tunnel under the ground of the Azara because he wanted to be able to peek out. He wanted to be tunneled all the way to the Kodesh HaKadoshim in order, because he wanted to peek out and see how the Kohen Gadol was doing the Avodah on Yom Kippur. Nobody's allowed to be in there. So he knew they're not going to let him in the regular way, especially if he was a Goy. So he tunneled under the ground to reach there. They caught him. They caught him digging and executed him. And later on, when they built a lishka in that same spot, they named it after him. One reason is, Mephoshim say, in that case, why would they name it after him? To remember the nest of how the Eivishti protected the integrity of the Beis Mikdash and of the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol. Whatever the case, so that was why they called the chamber Lishka Saparva. Next, we said, Persu Sodin Shalbutz, they spread out a linen cloth. So Maishna Shalbutz, so why at this linen? And we learned this the other day already. Omer Avkahana, Kadesh Yakir Shavodah Sayyim Bebigdei Butz, in order that he recognizes that today he's supposed to be wearing the linen clothing, because after all, every other day he's used to wearing the gold clothing, so now he needs to be reminded. We actually learned this the other day. We said Rav Kahana had said his statement in connection with our Mishnah, but in fact it applies equally well to the previous Mishnah. We said that according to the Chachamim, in the morning he wore clothes of 18 mana, and in the afternoon he wore clothes of 12 mana, totaling 30 mana. So the question is, why does the Tana need to mention the total? The Tana minyana asalashminen? Does the Tana need to teach us math? We know that 18 plus 12 equals 30. The answer is hokamash malon. No, what the Tana wants to tell us, dibitsir mehochi le neved. He can't make it any less than that. There can't be any less than 30 mana total. But if he reduces the amount for one for the morning and increases the one for the afternoon, then there's no problem. Most of the Mephoshim say it does still have to be, as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, that the morning ones do have to be more expensive than the afternoon ones. But in other words, it doesn't necessarily have to be 80, and it doesn't have to necessarily be 18 and 12. He could do, for example, 19 and 11, or he could do 20 and 10, as long as the total is at least 30. And as long as the morning ones are more expensive than the afternoon ones, then we're good. So where do we get the 30 from? So the Gemara doesn't really specify where we get the 30 from. It may be halacha l'moshe m'sinai. There is an interesting idea that the Avudraham says. The Gemara is going to quote over here now that it says four times in one pasuk the word bad. So it's bad kodesh yobash, or we're going to say bad yu absara, etc. And then you have later on in the perek also it mentions Digde Habod. So five times in the Pesukim about Yom Kippur, it mentions Bad. So the Avodraham points out Bad, the gematria of it is 6 times 5 equals 30. So that's a hint in the Torah for this idea that the two outfits together have to be worth 30 mana. Okay. So Dekolei Alma Mias the Shachar Adif. The bottom line is everybody agrees that the morning outfit has to be more expensive. Menalon, where do we get that from? Because even Rav Meir agrees to that. Rav Meir is saying that the one in the morning is 12 mana, and the one in the afternoon is 800 zuz, which is 8 mana, at least according to the Pshat of the Mishnah, 800 zuz equals 8 mana, and therefore, as Tosfos had said, shmoina mana doesn't really flow well, and therefore it doesn't say it. But nevertheless, according to him, the morning ones are also more expensive. So Menalon, where do we get that from? Amar of Huna, Bredi Rabbi Loi, because Omar Kra, the Pasuk says bad, 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 four times in the one Pasuk. It says they have Ksonis bad Kodesh, for each one of the four big Dekona that he wears, it says that it's made out of bad. Ksonis bad Kodesh Yobash, or Michna say bad Yu Absari, or Abnet bad Yachko, or Mithnevis bad Yitznoif. Now, why does it have to specify? We know that three of those four Begodim are made out of bad or made out of linen throughout the rest of the year. And okay, the fourth one, there's a machlokas, fine, whether it's linen only on Yom Kippur, but still, according to that opinion, according to one of the opinions, the Kohen Hediot wears an avnet of linen throughout the year. So why does it have to say four times bad? So it means muvcho sheba bad. So it means it has to be the bad among bad. It has to be the best kind of bad, bad meaning linen, so therefore it has to be the best quality linen. Tosfos learns like this. How do you get the best quality from why dafka four times bad? So like this, one of them tells us exactly that he has to wear linen clothes that he's not wearing, this big day zahav, to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The second one is, so the first one is with gufei, just to tell us that they're made out of linen. The second one is to tell us that together with the linen ones, he doesn't wear the gold ones like he does the rest of the year. The third one says it should be better quality than the rest of the year. And the fourth one tells us that the morning ones should, which is what the Pasuk is describing over there, should be better than the afternoon ones. Or just Tosfos says, maybe the third and fourth together, the third and fourth bad, tell us that it's mukhosh bad, the best of bad. Whatever the case, that's how we learn that it has to be the best. And that's where we see that the morning one has to be better than the afternoon one. Because after all, this Pasuk with the four times bad is talking about the avoda in the morning. So the Gemara says, Mesvi. The Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, quoting a pasuk in Yechezkel. Now Rashi actually had the girsa that we have in front of us over here is how Rashi changed the girsa. Beforehand, before Rashi came along, this Mesvi was further down on the Amud after something else that the Gemara says about the Bigdei Kohanah. Why that's important? We'll get to in a minute. So Mesvi. The pasuk in Yechezkel. Now the pesukim in Yechezkel describe the third Beis Hamikdash, Shibanav Meherav Yamenu. They also describe many details of the clothing and the avoda and whatever of the kohenim, and many of those details seem on the surface to be different than how it is now, than the halacha that we know as it was in the Mishkan in the first two Batei Mikdash. Now of course a navi can't make up new halachas of his own. So what do these mean? So some of them approach him and say, okay, that some of these halachas mean that the for example, now we're going to talk about that it says that the pasuk that mentions that the kohen should wear only linen clothes when he goes to serve in the chotzer apnimis. So some of the Mephoshim say, okay, what it means is, in other words, that La'asid Lavoi, all the regular Kohenim are going to be on the level of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Therefore, they're only wearing clothes like the kind that he wears to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But the Gemara here and a number of other places wants to assume as much as possible that the dinim that Yechezkel is telling us are actually the same dinim that we know already from the Torah, from Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaper, and Yechezkel is just putting them in different words. Sometimes what it is like, for example, Rashi mentions over here, you have certain details that were halacha l'moshe v'sinai, so they were unwritten, and Yechezkel came and wrote it down in a pasuk. So one of those psukim is, the pasuk says, the lov shub gadim acherim, they should wear other clothes. Now the first half of the psukim go like this. When they come to the gates of the inner courtyard, and the Gemara is going to be understanding over here that the inner courtyard refers to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, dig they fished him your boshu, they should wear linen clothes. And the loyal alayam tsemer, no wool should be on them, basharisam, bashari chotzer nimis, when they serve in the gates of the inner chotzer of avoisa and further in than that. So taking it in the sense that the Gemara is going to be taking it means, in other words, that when he's serving in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and here in the Pasuk, we're calling that Chotzer HaPnimis, then he's only wearing linen, which is, of course, what we know from the Torah, that in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's wearing only the four linen clothes. Then the next Pasuk continues, describing a little bit about the Birkat HaKohanim. Then, two Pasukim later, it continues, Uvet Seisam Al Chotzer HaChitzona, when they go out to the outer courtyard, El Chotzer HaChitzona El Am, to the outer courtyard where the people are, which with a double expression, achotzer achitzona, implies that there's a zone in between. So in other words, because we know, if you go from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you go to the Kodesh, and then you go to, and then you go out to the chotzer, to the Azara. So when they're going all the way out to the Azara, where the people are standing, the pasuk continues, yifshitu es bigdei mashahem mashosim bom, they should take off the clothes that they're serving with them, and place them in the holy chambers, they should wear other clothes, so that the people are not metame them while they're wearing their clothes, because the people, in other words, are not on as high level of tara, and therefore there's a concern that if they mingle with them, they're going to touch them, and the clothes are going to be tome, or at least not on the high level of tara that they need for the business. So now, the key point is, the Gemara is focusing on the expression in the pasuk, the lov shebegodim acherim, they should wear other clothes. Now, why would the pasuk be insisting that they should wear other clothes? So the lov shebegodim acherim, like kadrus on the dayim, so that they don't make people holy with their clothes, meaning, in other words, so the people are not accidentally metame their clothes. The word kodesh in Tanakh sometimes means tuma. So my lav acherim chashuv mehem. L'chore, if the pasuk is insisting that they should wear begodim acherim, then that means clothes, other clothes that are more important than what they wore before. So now, in other words, if we understand the pasuk that way, then what we're saying is that they should they take off the original clothes. Later on, they put on better quality clothes. So they leave the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They take off those clothes. They put on other clothes, preposterous meaning more expensive clothes. Later on, when they're coming back in, when the Kohen Gadol is coming back in order to take out the kaf and the machta. And that would explain why the pasuk is insisting that they should wear acherim, that they should wear other clothes, because in other words, there's no point on the face of it of the pasuk saying that they should wear cheaper clothes. What would be the difference? And if he wears clothes that are worth the same amount, what would be the problem? The pashtus, the pasuk is insisting that they should be more expensive clothes. Now, to be sure, you could say, Tosfos Yeshanim says, look, I mean, when he comes out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's putting on big days of, those are more expensive, those are more important, no? But the word v'lov shebegodim acherim implies that the whole rest of the day he's wearing begodim acherim, implying that the clothes he wears the whole rest of the day are all more important, according to the Gemara's Havamina, than the clothes that he wore in the morning. So Tosfos Yeshanim says, it's one thing we know when it says by the Trumas Hadeshen, when it says ufoshet es begodim v'lov shebegodim acherim, we learned previously that means cheaper clothes. Fine, but over there, that's exactly that. You're taking out the ashes, so we assume you're wearing cheaper clothes. Here, there's no particular reason to assume you're wearing cheaper. Adarabba, we know that when he comes out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and starts the next series of Avoida, he's going to be wearing the Bigdei Zahav, which are important. So Mestama, then the pasuk means that all the other ones that he wears throughout the day should be more important. So in that case, it comes out that the afternoon ones should be more important than the morning ones. And the answer was, well, not necessarily. Acherim pchusin mehen means the acherim can be like with Trumas HaDeshen, where it means that they're less important. They're worth less. And after all, there's a reason behind it. Rashi says the first avodah he's accomplishing kapara on behalf of the Jewish people. He's bringing in the ketores over there and he's sprinkling the blood of the par and the sair, which accomplish kapara. On the other hand, the second time he's not going in to accomplish any kapara; he's just going in to clean up after himself. So therefore, it makes sense that he should be wearing cheaper clothing. So that's that. So that establishes how we know that the morning ones are more expensive than the afternoon ones. Next, Tani Rav Huna bar Yehuda, va'amilo Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, achar shekolsa avodas tzibur, after the avoda of the tzibur is done, koyin she'osa le'imoy k'sonas, then a koyin whose mother made for him a k'sonas, loivsha is allowed to wear that k'sonas, va'ovid ba avodas yachid, and he's allowed to do with it avodas yachid uvil vadshim sirena letzibur. Provided what avodas yachid is, we'll talk about in a second. Uvil vadshim sirena letzibur. Provided that he gives it over to the tzibur. Now, what is avodas yachid? Rashi says over here. We learned this briefly before on Daf Chafei, but Rashi over here explains that it means when this that we're talking about taking out the kaf and machta. It's called avodas yachid in the sense that tzibur doesn't really need it. It's more just that the kohen gadol should clean up after himself. So therefore, it's called avodas yachid. Then Rashi brings another explanation that it means when he reads the parasha of Yom Kippur, which we're going to learn about in the seventh parak. However, Rashi doesn't like that explanation because over there it says that he could be wearing his own clothing, doesn't say anything about that he has to give it over to the tzibur. Reading the parasha of Yom Kippur is not an avoda to the extent that he should have to be wearing big dekona. So why would we be saying over vadshim sirena letzibur? And then there's a third explanation that a couple of the Mefoshim have, that avodas yachid means exactly that. It means the avoda of private people's korbanos as opposed to the avodas tzibur, which has to be done with big dekohuna bought from funds of the tzibur. Okay, so the Gemara asks, by the way, why is it that we're mentioning specifically that his mother would make him maksonis? And further on, we're also going to have a couple of examples where it says about kohenim golem, whose mother is made for the maksonis. The Ben Yehoyada says an interesting point. He says the Gemara in Zvachim talks about what each of the big dekohuna are mechaper for. It says that the ksonis is mechaper for shvichus damim, for bloodshed, with the connection being because when they sold Yosef, they took his coat and dipped it in blood. So therefore, there's an association between the ksonis and blood. So now what it is we know that the Rotzchim who went to the Orei Miklat would go flee from the Orei Miklat when the Kohen Gadol died. And for that reason, the Mishnah in Makkos tells us that the mothers of the Kohenim Golim would supply food and water and other necessities to these people that are stuck in the Orei Miklat. So that Abba, they should daven that the Kohen Gadol should live long rather than that he should die young. So therefore, because of that also, because of that association, the Kohenim Gdolim's mothers particularly were big on making a ksonis for their sons. That way, there's less likely to be shvichus damim, and that way, there's less likely to be people who are potentially davening for their son to die so they could leave the Orei Miklat. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Pshita, isn't it obvious that if he gives it over to the tzibur, then it's fine? It should be no different than anything else that you donate to the tzibur. And the answer is, you would have thought, maybe we have to be concerned that he wouldn't thoroughly give it over, that he still has in mind, in his heart, that he still wants to keep it a little bit for himself. So therefore, Kamash Malan, therefore, Rav Shmuel by Yehuda is telling us, don't worry about that. We assume that he gives it over, Belev Shalom. Tosfos says there's a logical reason for that, because after all, there's a machlokas about that elsewhere in the Gemara and at the end of Bava Metzia. But over here, we know the fact of the matter is, first of all, the Kohen Gadol is generally a Tamid Chacham, and so he knows the halacha that if it still belongs to him, it's not going to be kosher for the Avodah. Also, because the whole covered of the Kohuna is his. The whole point is he wants to wear this Ksonis and be able to show off the honor of the kohuna. So he knows it's only going to be kosher, only if he gives it over completely to the tzibur. So therefore he'll do that, because he wants to be able to wear this ksonis. At this point, by the way, is where the other Rishonim, is where the original Girsa before Rashi had the question from the Pasuk in Yechezkel about the Lov Shabagodim Acherim. Where the question was then that on the face of it, the ones in the afternoon have to be more important than the ones in the morning. So why are we saying that? So why are we saying that the Kohen's mother can make him something and he's going to wear it davka in the afternoon. And the answer is that taka, they have one in the afternoon, has to be less expensive than the one in the morning, which would mean, in other words, that if they're going to make him one for the morning, then it means the one in the, if they're going to make him one for the afternoon, then the one in the morning is going to have to be even more expensive than that. So the Gemara gives some examples. Amru Olav al Rabbi Shmuel ben Pavi. They said about Rabbi Shmuel ben Pavi, who was one of the Kohanim Golim in the second Beis Mikdash. We learned about him on Daf Tes. He was one of the good Kohanim Golim who lasted for some time. He was Kohen Gadol for 10 years, etc. there. So Sha'os Salaim Aksonis Shalmeya Mana. His mother made him a Aksonis that was worth 100 Mana. Now remember, in the Mishnah, we talked about, we had the outfit that he wore in the morning was 12 mana according to the mayor and 18 mana according to the Chachamim. Here, just the Ksonis, actually the Rambam actually learns that when we say 18 and 12, respectively, it does mean only the Ksonis. But here we have a Ksonis that was worth even more than that, that was worth 100 mana, which again, to put it in perspective, would be the amount that a poor person could live on for 50 years. At the Loivsha, and he put it on, Ovid Ba Avodas Yachid. He did with it the Avodas Yachid, however we define Avodas Yachid, or Mosra the Tzibur. And he indeed gave it over to the Tzibur, so that it belongs to the Tzibur, and now he's allowed to do the Avodah in it. Similarly, Omru Olav al Rabbi Elazar ben Chausum, they said about Rabbi Elazar ben Chausum, who was also a Kohen Gadol in the second Beis Mikdash. We learned about him also on Daf Tes, where he was Kohen Gadol for 11 years. His mother made him a Ksonis worth 20,000 mana. So 20,000 mana. But in that case, it didn't work out. The other kohenim would not allow him to wear that. Because he looked naked in it, because it was made out of such fine linen that it was see-through. The Rambam actually mentions in this connection, the Rambam mentions a halacha, for example. The Rambam lived in Egypt most of his life, as we know, and he mentions in connection with a certain halacha, he mentions clothes made out of Egyptian linen that are almost see-through. So here you had, in other words, so I guess the Rambam is describing how if the material was very fine, if it's very, very good quality, then it can be like that. So here you have a similar thing. The linen that they made these big kahuna, that they made this ksonis out of, was so fine that it was see-through. So he couldn't wear it in the Beis Mikdash. So the question is, the Gemara says, mimischazi, how could you possibly see through it? Later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about near the end of the seventh parak. We're going to talk about how the big kahuna were made. And we mentioned over there that the linen was a 6-ply thread. So in that case, a 6-ply thread, how is it see-through? The answer is Amar Abaye Kachamra B'mazga. The same way as you can see wine through a clear glass. No matter how thick the glass is, you can still see the color of the wine through it. The same way over here, no matter how thick the threads were, the linen for the threads themselves was so fine, it was beaten so fine that it was see-through. So even if you had a 6-ply thread of it, it was still pretty see-through, and therefore it was a problem, and therefore the Kohanim wouldn't allow him to wear it. Since we're mentioning Rabbi Elazar ben Chausum, so the Gemara digresses to talk about him and certain other people. The Gemara is going to mention soon that Rabbi Elazar ben Chausum was extremely rich. We see over here from the story that his mother made him a ksonis worth 20,000 mana, which is, we're talking in modern terms, that would be millions and millions of dollars. So we're going to bring soon that he was very, very rich, and nevertheless, he learned lots of Torah, and we're going to bring in that connection him and some other people. So Tanan Abanan, the poor person, the rich person, and the wicked person all come to be judged in front of the Beis Din Shamayla. The Rosha, particularly over here, we mean somebody who was into znus. In general, in Gemara terminology, a lot of times the word avera, unspecified, means znus. So over here, that's what it means, that he was into znus, and therefore, besides the fact that it's an aveda, there's also the point that he was wasting time that he could have been learning Torah. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos, Tchilas dinay shal adam al divrei Torah, the first thing that a person is judged for in the Beis Din Shamayla is whether he spent his time learning Torah or whether he wasted it on other things. So over here, that's how it's going to be. La'oni omim loy, the poor person that he's asked, mipnei ma loy asakta b'Torah, why didn't you occupy yourself with learning Torah? If he says, I was poor and so I was too busy making a living, so I had no time to learn Torah, then we say to him, were you poorer than Hillel? Hillel was extremely poor, and nevertheless, he spent time as much as possible learning Torah. what happened with Hillel? Omru Olavah Hillel Zokin. Now, this was obviously long before Hillel became the Nasi. This is when he was still a Talmud. So they said about Hillel Zokin, Shabachol Yom Vayom Haya Oise, Omistaka Bataupi. Every day he would work, which he was supposed to work anyway, called Torah She'enim and Malacha, Sefer Batela, it says in Pirkei Avos. So he would work for a living, and every day he would earn a Taupi. A Taupi is a very small coin. Rashi explains it's worth half a dinner. So if you think about it, a dinar is a zuz. Usually in Gemara, we usually assume that a minimum wage worker in those days could be expected to earn 4 zuzim a day. Here, Hillel is earning 1/8 of that. And he didn't even use it all to support his family. He gave half of it to the guard who was standing by the Beis Medrash, and the other half would go to support himself and his family. Why is there a guard by the Beis Medrash? Marsha has a couple of possibilities. Maybe the Beis Medrash was outside the city, so they needed a guard over there to keep wild animals or bandits or whatever from coming in. Maybe also the vote was that they had a guard over there because, like we find in Brachas with Rabbi Gamliel, where he held that any Talmud who's not Toichik Boroi, where his inside is not like his outside, doesn't deserve to be in the Beis Medrash. Maybe in this Beis Medrash of Shmaya and Avtalion, they held the same way, and therefore they had a guard over there in order to keep people who don't deserve to be Talmidei HaYeshiva out. Ben Yehoyada says a different possibility. Maybe the guard over here, they had somebody over there who needed to keep the lights on and do, you know, you have all the various expenses that are involved in running a Beis Medrash, and they had a guard there by night to guard the place. So he would lay out the money for oil for the lamps and for the various other expenses that they'd have, and then he would be paid back out of these coins that the Bnei HaYeshiva would give him. Okay. So Pam achas leimotzali histata. So one time it happened that Hillel couldn't find anything to do work. He couldn't find anything to earn money that day. So the guard by the Beis Medrash wouldn't allow him to go in. So he went up to the roof and was lying over there on the roof. Nitla literally means he was hanging, but it means, in other words, he was lying down over there on above the skylight. The Yoshav al pi aruba, he's sitting above the skylight. Kadesh Yishma Divrele Kim Chaim Pishmai Vavtayim, so that you can hear words of the living words of Hashem, or the words of the living Hashem from Shmaya and Avtalion, who were his rebbe. So he's sitting up over there on top of the roof, listening in through the skylight. Omru, so they said, Osa Yom Erev Shabbos Hoya, that day was Erev Shabbos, Utkufas Tevis Hoysa, and it was Tkufas Tevis, it was the height of the winter. V'yorod Olav Shelag Min HaShemayim, snow fell on him from the heaven. Now, Ben Yehoyada asks, why does it have to say Min HaShemayim? Where else does snow fall from? So he says, the vote is, it wasn't, the weather forecast wouldn't have called for snow, but Hashem, it was cold, but it wasn't necessarily that the kind of weather that would have produced snow. But Hashem made Min HaShemayim, especially that it should snow on him, in order that everybody will see, as we're going to continue in the story, how great he was and how much he's Moser Nefesh for learning Torah. So snow fell. He also explains, actually, now there is an interesting point that Mephoshim discuss over here. Did Hillel realize that he's endangering his life? So one way of looking at it is, yes, he so much wanted to learn Torah that he was ready to risk his life for it. But even though he knew it's freezing and he's going to be sitting up there on the skylight and so forth, nevertheless, he was willing to do it. The Iyun Yaakov, for example, on En Yaakov, understands it that way, and he explains something in the continuation of the Gemara based on that. On the other hand, Ben Yehoyada says no, and he goes together with this thing that Min HaShemayim, that no, it was snow wasn't forecast. It was cold, so fine. So Hillel bundled himself up. He didn't expect that it was going to snow and that there was going to be a huge pile of snow on top of him. So it was completely unexpected. He wasn't at all trying to be Moser Nefesh. He was just, I mean, he was being Moser Nefesh to sit up there in the cold and listen, but not that he thought that his life was actually going to be in danger. Anyway, so he was there the whole night. By the way, Ben Yehoyada says, what about his poor family at home? So he says, Mistama, what he did was, before, at the beginning of Shabbos, he went home, he made Kiddush for them. And then later on in the evening, he went back to this Medrash because he wanted to hear the Torah that Shmaya and Avtalion are teaching. Befrat, he says, it seems that on Friday night, they used to talk about Sodas HaTorah. They used to talk about secrets of Torah, secrets of Kabbalah. And therefore, particularly, he wanted to hear that. And that's why the Gemara uses specifically the expression for Divrei Elokim Chai. Whatever the case. So snow fell on him. Sha'ala Omer Ashacha, when dawn broke, Omer Shmaya Avtalion, he says, Avtalion Ochi, B'chol Yom Abayis Meir, every other day, the room is lit up. Today it's very dark. Is it maybe a cloudy day? And again, this fits with what Ben Yehoyada says, that it wasn't actually that the weather forecasted cold for snow. If it was, then there's no reason for Shmaya to wonder if it's a cloudy day. Of course it is. But the forecast had been it was going to be clear, but min ha-shamayim, snow fell on him anyway. They look, they peeked with their eyes. They saw a figure of a person on the skylight. They went up there and they found three amas of snow piled on top of him. An amma is a foot and a half, according to the Avram Chaimna, 2 feet, according to the Chazon Ish. So you're talking somewhere between 4.5 and 6 feet of snow are piled on top of him. Porku, they extracted him, they dug him out of the snow. Vechitzuhu, they washed him in warm water. Vesichuhu, they smeared him with oil. Vashivuhu, kineged hamadura, and they put him in front of the fire to warm up. Amru, they said on him, Roy Zel Lachal of us a Shabbos. Such a person is Roy, deserves to have Shabbos broken on his behalf. Now, there's an interesting point on that, that Mephoshim asked, what do you mean? I mean, we know you're Machal Shabbos to save any person. Why are they mentioning specifically this person deserves to have Shabbos be Neschal for him as though like a different person wouldn't? There's a few different explanations. The Iyun Yaakov, again, he says before that Hillel knew that he was going to be going there in the snow and that he's going to be risking his life. So in that case, they're saying for a regular person who did that, we wouldn't bother. He wants to risk his own life. We're not necessarily going to be Machal Shabbos on his behalf. But here, where Hillel did it out of love for Torah and out of a sense of Mesiras Nefesh for Torah, then therefore he's not like that, and he deserves that we should be Machal Shabbos for him. There's a number of other answers as well. Among them is the things they did for him that we just said. They washed him and rubbed him and whatever is all only Malachas Derabanan. They're saying if we would have needed to, he would have even deserved to have Malachas Daraisa done on his behalf because of his Mesiras Nefesh. Another angle is at the end of Ar Masechta, we're going to have a sugya about the dinim of Pekuach Nefesh on Shabbos and on Yom Kippur, where you have an opinion over there. Now, this is not the halacha, but you have an opinion of Reb Shimon ben Manasseh over there that if it's only for Chaye Shah, if after we help the person, they're still only going to live for a short amount of time, then we're not Machal Shabbos for them. That's not the halacha. The halacha is even for Chaye Shah, you're Machal Shabbos. So, but Shmaya and Abtayan might have held like that opinion. So they're saying for regular people, we wouldn't be Machal Shabbos for Chaya Shah. But for him, even a Shah of his life is so precious. You see how much he put in, how much effort he put into learning Torah, that he deserves that. And one more explanation the Chidah says is that usually, fine, you Machal Shabbos for a person, but after all, not necessarily such a good thing for his neshama. Yeah, we do it because we say later on in the Masechta, Chalal Shabbos Achas Kadeshi Yishma Shabbos is having. Break one Shabbos on his behalf, so that in the future he'll be able to keep many more Shabbos. But still, how well does the average person keep Shabbos on such a high level that it should be worth it? Not necessarily. I mean, halacha is halacha, but nevertheless, it's still not necessarily such a great thing for his neshama. So Shmaya and Abtayin are saying, for Hillel, it's not like that. He's such a tzaddik gomer that for him, it's definitely worth it. It's definitely a good thing for his neshama that we broke Shabbos on his behalf. Okay. Whatever the case, so that's the story of how Hillel, even though he was so desperately poor, still learned Torah, and therefore the Beis Din Shamayla says to the poor person, why don't you learn from Hillel and do the same thing? Next. Osher, then the rich person comes to the Beis Din Shamayla. Omrim leim b'nam ma'ala yasakba Torah. We ask him, why didn't you learn Torah? If he says I was rich and I was too busy taking care of my possessions, and he says also maybe, look, you know, I'm a zvulun. Okay, so I'm not a yisachar. I'm a zvulun. I supported people who learned Torah. Nevertheless, we tell him, were you richer than Rabbi Elazar ben Chasum? And he still learned Torah. What was the story? His father left him as a Yerusha, 1,000 cities on the land, corresponding to them 1,000 ships in the sea. One point is that his father left it to him is, you shouldn't think that earlier in life he spent a lot of time earning wealth, so much fabulous wealth, and now only later in life did he decide to become a Talmid Chacham. No, his father did all that work, he only inherited it. And the reason why, also Ben Yehoyada says, why it says Kinegdon is sometimes you might think that the Elef Ayodas is a guzma. It's just an exaggeration. It means a large number of ships, but not necessarily 1,000. But no, we're saying Kinegdon, corresponding to them. There are, in fact, exactly 1,000 cities and 1,000 ships. So nevertheless, he didn't spend the time taking care of all this wealth of his. Every day he would take a bag of flour on his shoulder, because after all, imein kemach ein tori, he needs to provide himself with food to eat on the way. Or mahalach le'ir le'ir medina medina le'mod tora. He would travel around from one city to another and from one country to another to learn Torah. A heavy gola le'makom Torah. So he was fulfilling that in the literal sense. Pa'amachas matzu avodav. One time, his own servants found him, but also by Angaria, and they were going to force him to work on behalf of the lord of the land. That was how it was in those days. That if you're in a certain place, if you live in a certain place, or you're visiting in a certain place, then you're obligated to do a certain amount of work on behalf of the person who owned the land. In this case, the person is Rabbi Elazar ben Chaim. They didn't recognize him, so they wanted him. So they wanted to force him to do his quota of work. Amalahan, he says to them, "Bakoshim ekem hanichuni ba'elach lomad Torah. Please let me go. I want to learn Torah." Omrulo, they said to him, "Chayei Rabbi Elazar ben Chaim shein manichin oisach. We swear by the life of Rabbi Elazar ben Chaim that we're not going to allow you to. You have to do your work." And on the side of it here, it brings a girsa that in the end he had to give them a huge amount of money for them to leave him alone. Now, why didn't he just tell them straight out that he is Rabbi Elazar ben Chaim? So the Rambam Mefoshim would say, because he figured that would be trading on the fact that he's a Talmid Chacham. And we have, for example, a story in Nedarim where Rav Tarfon informed somebody who he was. This guy was threatening to throw him in the river. And he said, "Oy la Tarfon, tzeh herga." And then he felt bad about it the rest of his life because he had used the fact that he learns Torah to save himself. So some of the Mefoshim say that over here also. On the other hand, Marusha says no. I mean, if he had said he's Rabbi Elazar ben Chaim, they wouldn't be honoring him because he's a Talmid Chacham. They would be honoring him because he is the lord of the area that they're making him do work on behalf of. No, Marusha says, just since they didn't recognize him, how is he going to prove who he is? Not like nowadays you can pull out your license and show them. He would have had to go and bring proof, and that would have wasted a lot of time. And he didn't want to waste time. He wanted to learn Torah. So therefore, he had no choice but to buy his way out of it. And the Braisa continues, he never went and saw them, so he didn't know what they looked like, and they didn't know what he looked like. He was sitting and learning Torah the whole day and the whole night. He had people working for him who know who these servants are, but he himself didn't get involved with that. So the rich person is told in the base in Shamaila, you weren't as rich as Rabbi Elazar ben Chaim, and yet he was able to partake in Torah by day and by night, so you should have also. Next, Rasha Oimimloi, the Rasha who was involved in Znus, we tell him, "Ifnei Maloi Asakta b'Torah, why didn't you occupy yourself with learning Torah?" Im Omer Nor Hayisi v'Torah b'Yitzri, if he says, "I was handsome, so I was distracted by my Yetzahara, women are always throwing themselves at me, and therefore I didn't have the peace of mind to learn Torah." They said to him, "Klum Nor Hayisi v'Yosef, were you more handsome than Yosef?" And he managed to withstand that. Omru all about Yosef Atzadik. They said about Yosef Atzadik, every day during the time when this was going on, the wife of Potiphar is trying to constantly seduce him with words. She's constantly trying to convince him to go with her. And Godim Shalov Shalai Shachris, Lailov Shalai Iris, that she didn't wear the same clothes in the morning as in the evening. She put on a different outfit in the evening in order to attract him that way. And the ones she wore in the evening would not be the ones she wore the next morning. She's always changing outfits to try and attract him. And at Omraloy, and she's telling him, "Shomali, listen to me and then be Mazana with me." He says no. As the pasuk says, he refused it. Omraloy, so she starts threatening him. I'm going to throw you in jail. Omaloi, he says to her, "Okay, if you do that, Hashem matir asurin. Hashem can free the ones who are in jail from the capital tilim that we say in morning davening, capital kuf mem vav." In fact, Marusha points out that there are a number of phrases in that capital that refer to Yosef. Ashrei shekel Yaakov ve'ezra sivrei al Hashem alekov connects, for example, with the fact that it says Vayav Yaakov ki yesh shever b'mitzrayim, which means, among other things, that Yaakov realized that there was hope in Mitzrayim. He had a flicker of Ruach HaKodesh that Yosef is in Mitzrayim. So therefore, that's Elokei Yaakov Ezra, Sivroi, his hope is Al Hashem Alekov. Later on, the Pasuk mentions Oysa Mishpat LaShukim. Hashem does justice on behalf of the ones who were treated unfairly, which is Yosef, who was thrown in jail, and then Hashem rewarded him. And Noisin Lechem L'Ra'evin, the result of that is Hashem provides bread for the hungry, because Yosef provided food for the whole world. And then it continues with the sequence of psukim that we're quoted over here, which is all how did Yosef reach that level of how did Yosef reach that level of being the viceroy? is because he withstood Potiphar's wife with all the threats that she was doing. So she says, "Harini kefefes kaimaska. I'll make your tall stature be bent over. In other words, I'll beat you." He says, "Okay, Hashem." He says, "Hashem zekuf kufim. Hashem unbends the bent ones." She threatens, "Harini masames senecha. I'll blind your eyes." He says, "Hashem pekeach ivrim." Now, Hashem pekeach ivrim is actually in the pasuk first. So why over here are we mentioning it last? Yon Yaakov says because that was like her final. That was like the final straw. If she wants him to look at her, if she blinds him, obviously that's not going to be accomplished. So even though it's mentioned in the pasuk first, that was really her last threat to him. And once he said never mind, Hashem pekeach ivrim, then she realized she's not going to get anywhere with the threats. Nosna le elef kikre kesef. She offered him 1,000 kikre of silver. Lishmaya etzva lishkav ima, to listen to her, lishkav etzva lias ima, to lie together with her, to be with her, which, by the way, Rashi mentions on the pasuk. It means even, she's saying, fine, don't have relations with me, just lie next to me. And even that, he turned her down. He didn't want to listen to her. And the reason why was lishkav etzva ba'olam hazeh lias ima lo'olam haba, because he knew that if he lies next to her in this world, then he will be with her in olam haba. Because you have the Gemara in Erevin says that a Yid never winds up in Gehenna because Avraham Avinu recognized that they have a bris milah and takes them out of there, except for a person who was with a goita, where then he grows an Ola again, and therefore Avraham doesn't recognize him as Gemalot, and he winds up over there. So you also have a Gemara in Soita, for example, that mentions that when a person does this kind of Avera, it wraps itself around him and always stays with him. So Yosef knew that if he gives in to Potiphar's wife, then she's going to be with him la'olam haba, and therefore he turned her down. And by the way, we have to remember, of course, that the Medrash tells us that she knew with her stargazing, with her astrology, that she and Yosef are destined to have descendants together, which they did. Yosef married Osnas, who was their daughter, or his stepdaughter, but still, kol magadol ben chaveray. And nevertheless, Yosef still didn't give in to her. So Nimtza, so it comes out, Hillel mechayev es aniyim, so Hillel makes the aniyim guilty. In other words, again, when the oni claims I couldn't learn Torah because I was too poor, then we have the example of Hillel to throw in his face and say, in that case, then you're guilty of not doing what Hillel did. Rabbi Lozman and Chausen does the same for the rich people. They can't get away with arguing that they didn't learn Torah because they were rich, because they're not as rich as him. Yosef Machayev is a Rishoyim, and Yosef is Machayev the Rishoyim in the same way that they can't get away with their excuse that they couldn't control themselves, because we see that they could have, that the same way as Yosef did, they could have. Why is it in that order, by the way? Yosef was long before Rabbi Lozman and Chausen and Hillel. Why is he listed last? Ben Yehoyada says because they go in order of importance. The Oni is the most important in Hashem's eyes. The Osher is the next most important, and the Rosha is the least important because he was Matame himself. So therefore he's listed last. Okay.